Time now for the College Football Inquirer with Dan Wetzel.
You will find enough kids to staff every single Division I program and then some. Why would you give your spot away free when, as a business principal, you would charge for that spot?
SI's Ross Dellinger.
What's the value of a scholarship anymore in the NIL era? What's the value of it? Because some select kids, high-profile football, basketball players, are making well above what their scholarship is every year.
And SI's Pat Forty.
Beer is a good product. Even the bad beer is a good product. Don't screw it up by putting cheese powder in it or trying to in any way replicate chili in the beer.
Here's Pat, Russ, and Dan.
All right, welcome to the pod, and we have National Signing Day next week, the final one. Not very exciting because there's only four top 100 players in the 24/7 sports composite that are going to still have to sign, and one of them doesn't appear like he's going to sign, but we can talk about that. We also have the end of the transfer portal, at least at this stage. There'll be another after the spring, which has shook up all sorts of stuff. Guys are sorting out. And I mean, some of them are like transfer portal will beget more transfer portal, right?
Yep.
You look at Ole Miss, their quarterback room now has Spencer Sanders, the 4-year starter from Oklahoma State, and Walker Howard, the 5-star recruit from LSU, who has I don't even know how many years of eligibility people have anymore. Just
long term. I stopped referring to anybody as sophomore, junior, senior because what's the point? You don't know. Like, might be there for 6-7 years.
He's got the John Calipari lifetime deal. Like, you just keep going. Who knows? Till he dies, he can play here. I don't know how NCAA does this thing. Anyway, he's got a lot of eligibility. Spencer Sanders apparently will be done after the next year. We will see. Maybe, maybe not. And then you got Jackson Dart, who probably at one point thought he was going to be the, you know, QB1, had the job, and now he, so like, Ole Miss brings in two more guys, and now it's like, are all three of them going to be there at the end? Can the other two still transfer again, or they did they impose that thing, or is Jackson Dart the guy who could be on the way out, or like, you know, everyone's complaining about the transfer portal. It's like, you guys are recruiting over each other, so what are you going to do? Pat, what do you know?
I get the feeling that Jackson Dart's on the clock here.
Yeah.
Because he would be the one. They're not bringing in multiple quarterbacks if they were, like, in love with him. He had a good season. He didn't have a great season. They ran the ball mostly. But, you know, they obviously want more out of the quarterback position than Dart gave them. And if I'm him and I'm looking around and seeing a guy, you know, first of all, a 5-star recruit, but then also Spencer Sanders, who, I mean, like, threw and ran for 4 billion yards in his time at Oklahoma State. You got to figure you're the odd man out there. And that is the way these things sometimes go. It's, you know, the old overbooking. You used to overbook as freshmen. You know, you'd bring in 3 quarterbacks and let it sort itself out. Now you bring in a 5th-year guy and a sophomore, and you got a junior already, and then you sort it out. So,
and Jackson transferred from USC. Jackson transferred from USC 1 year ago. Not even.
Right.
January 29th, he hit the Ole Miss. So it's got 1 year, and now they transferred in 2 more dudes.
Which means he's out of transfers. You know,
so right. You can only do one now? Without
right, you only do one. Right, it's a one-time supposedly transfer. Unless he graduates or gets the waiver. Yeah.
Well, there's going to be a long-lost great aunt that just got cancer. Yeah,
exactly.
Somewhere.
Right. Yeah. That has, you know, a failing kidney. And you know.
Yeah. And they've you know, recently at the thoughts NCAA convention, they made stricter the waiver process because they are, like, tired of the granting. I don't remember how they made it stricter. It's NCAA released something or whatever. But they're trying to get out of granting too many waivers. The problem is, you know, and we talked about this before, with the one-time transfer, they crack the door, and it's not closing again like Gary Barta and other athletic directors, some other older athletic directors want, is for them to to go back to the sitting out a year. Like, that's not happening. So they crack the door, and it's just going to get kicked all the way open where it is an unlimited transfer. In a lot of ways, it already is, because waivers are being granted, and if they're not granted, lawsuits are going to eventually be filed. But, you know, they made it stricter, which a lot of people, especially in the NIL industry, didn't understand, and other lawyers didn't understand why the NCAA has made that stricter, because I think everybody assumed we were looking at, you know, an unlimited transfer situation.
Yeah, I'm of all the things I'm mad at the NCAA about, this one's pretty high on the list, is just failing to close the transfer loophole. I am fine with the one-time immediate eligibility transfer as long as it's now uniform across every sport, which it is. But you got to stop giving waivers, period, under any circumstance. What they should have said, I remember a couple of years ago talking to, you know, somebody on some committee about this. And they said, you know, yeah, we're gonna crack down on the waivers. And then they went the opposite way. So now they're talking about it again. We'll see if they actually do it. But no, there's no reason you should get an immediate eligibility transfer. I'm sorry. If you had hardship at your other school, if you were poorly treated, so what? Go sit out another year at the other school. If you, there's no circumstance I would allow it. I would not. I would just say you get one time, and after that, you're done. You sit out a year when you transfer again.
Well, it's one or the other, right? You either make it unlimited, or you don't. It just
Or you do what you said you were going to do, and you make it one time, and then you put in the limitation.
Yeah, I wouldn't even done the first. I think I've said that before. But if you, it was completely unfair that other athletes in the sports that don't make money could do it, could transfer.
Right.
Right. You could switch in field hockey, but not in football. Okay. That doesn't make any sense. A lot of these rules don't make any sense. Like, college hockey's got like 50 guys that have been drafted already still playing. And, you know, the sport has not collapsed, although they'll tell you it would. There's all the different stuff. But yeah, the second one, because here's the thing, if you have to sit out, even if you did the first one right away, it now actually adds, I don't know how to, like, it adds resource that the school has to provide.
Yeah.
So you have 85 scholarships and you take these transfers and they sit for a year, that you don't have 85 eligible guys for that year. So you are going to be more, do I want this transfer, rather than can I run the guy off in 1 year? And I'm not saying that's what Lane Kiffin is doing, but it's happening at some point. Like, when you can just, the players are treating this like a one and done.
Right.
And the coaches are treating it like a one and done. And maybe that's just a fair reaction, but this is a NCAA created, you know, mess. I don't know if it's a mess, but situation. So yeah, right. Lane Kiffin's just smart on it. And it's like, I'm going to bring in three guys every year and see what the heck I got to weigh the way the NFL does, right? They weren't asking, you know, Jimmy Garoppolo if he felt okay with the Brock Purdy coming in. We might need him.
Right.
And so, you know, you just get all your quarterbacks, and then if somebody gets hurt, well, you're gone, or somebody's feelings are hurt and they got to transfer, you transfer. And it's not a dumb way. I mean, you know, they have Damond Williams, a 2024 really good quarterback from Arizona, committed to Ole Miss too, you know, who would arrive in 2 years. You know, but will they just keep stacking guys? So I don't know. I think it's like it started with too much power to the player, but now the coaches have all the power still, or have a lot of it. So they have to react to that, and that creates the circus. And then when everyone complains that there's 1,000 guys in the portal, it's like, well, some of those guys, some percentage of those guys are in the portal because you guys are running a system smartly, or exploiting the system that you created that encourages 1,000 guys to end up in the portal.
Sure.
That makes sense.
Running guys off or overbooking. My question, like, did Walker Howard know Spencer Sanders was coming, and vice versa?
I don't know.
Like, they came within like a couple of days of each other, and it's like, oh, what? You're showing up too? I'd like to be there for that new student orientation. It's like, hey.
It's gotta what be are you doing here? Just tough, like, that quarterback room. Man, if that is a kumbaya, we'll hear that. We all support each other.
Oh, yeah. Man, yeah, we're brothers.
Good people, man. Good people.
Yeah.
I mean, three of you all got promised the job. All of you transferred to Ole Miss expecting to get, well, Spencer Sanders knew what was up. He was just like, I'll take these two. I got them.
Well, I've seen the Walker, tape.
I'm better.
Walker's the youngest, so I think he's probably more of a long-term, maybe down the line thing. And Spencer and Jackson sound like more of the short-term having a competition for next year. But I think Ole Miss knows that, you know, they'll probably start fall camp not with all three quarterbacks. So, which it's interesting because, you don't expect, but Walker already transferred once, so he used his one time, and so did Jackson. And then Spencer's mm-hmm. Is Spencer a graduate transfer?
Yeah.
So he could transfer again, I believe. He can do it again as a graduate. So he could.
Wait, he could get leave. A sixth year?
He could leave again. He could transfer again, if he wanted. But they're all kind of bound unless they get the whole waiver thing, you know, which brings the conversation in a full circle. But they could all be kind of, so to speak, stuck.
Jackson played 2 years, one 2020, one at USC, 2022. So he's got 2 to 7 years left. I don't know. 2 to 3. So 2 to 4.
2 to 7.
Sounds like a prison term. Yeah. How much you got left? I'm in 2 to 7.
It'd be good behavior. Listen, if Jackson Dart is throwing passes for Kent State in 2027, I'm not going to be shocked. You heard it here first. I don't know how. I don't know if it's possible. I hope that's not the case, Jackson. But if that's if it happens, I'm not. You heard it here first. I don't know. I don't know any of the rules anymore. Neither did the NCAA.
Everybody gets a transfer whenever you want it.
I just, like, I guess you have to have, you have to, like, so before this, now they transfer, like, could you apply for the waiver after spring practice? Like, let's say Jackson Dart just holds these guys off. Like, he's great in the spring. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, Walker Howard might be like, all right, I'll get the job, I guess, in a couple, I don't, who knows, right? But let's say Spencer Sanders is like, well, this is not it. I didn't come here to be the backup. I only got 1 or 2 years left. Can he all of a sudden find the sick aunt in June? Or is there like a 1 year penalty where you have to at least be there like a season?
I think the sick aunt's always available.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't think you have to be there. I don't know the specifics.
No, actually, like, once you establish residency and enroll at a school, I think your clock starts.
Yeah.
He's got to pass his classes. I mean.
Yeah. So that's the thing. We're like, I do think Spencer Sanders is to, as Ross said, as a grad transfer, I think he could probably go again.
Yeah, I think so.
But the other two, I mean, not the Jackson Dart. Well, no, Jackson Dart's already used his transfer. We're all confused. Walker Howard can't get back up and leave. Never mind. You don't get never mind. So
I saw a basketball recruit the other day. Yeah. His basketball recruits for Final Five were like, I can't remember what the schools were, and I can't remember which player it was, but it was something like, you know, he's going to choose between Kentucky, Kansas, Overtime Elite, the Australian Professional League, and like the G League, and like just work. It was like a Elite X training. It was like, that was
nice.
His hats, like, what are we gonna do, a hat dance with all these things? Might go work for Eddie's, you know, towing company down the
put some jobs on there. Yeah,
okay. I'm pleased to choose the University of Overtime Elite.
I don't know what he was doing. I was like, all right, fine, go be yourself, man, live your best life. I just have no idea what this is. I don't know, man. I don't know. This one seems like they've walked into it, and Portal King Lane Kiffin is like, hey, this works for me. I can load up on quarterbacks, and now I might have them all stuck. I mean, if you don't care about like how nicely they're all getting along,
right?
I would sure like going into the season with these three.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Mm-hmm. You got to be a sucker to just hand your job over to one. And I mean, they've always done this. Big schools have done this.
That's what I said. Yeah. Overbooking is not new.
Yeah. I mean, Mac Jones is a viable NFL quarterback who was third string for most of his career at Alabama. So who's it? Who's the one that was behind Leinart at USC? Never even played. And it made the league. He got drafted.
Matt Castle or no?
Yeah, it might have been Matt Castle, right? I mean, so this is not unusual. And they used to have 200 scholarships in like in the 70s and 80s. Everybody got a scholarship, you know, eight string, all that stuff. But certainly an interesting.
And somehow there was still enough money for non-revenue sports then. Oh, never mind. Never mind.
Uh-oh. All right. Well, Pat's excited about this New York Times article.
It's a good story.
It was well done. New York Times Magazine. That's when they really get highbrow.
Oh, yeah.
Bruce Schoenfeld did this story. It's in the New York Times Magazine. I'm guessing it comes out this week. They may give it online like a little early. I don't know. If you buy the New York Times Sunday paper, which I think is cost like $15 now.
Yeah.
Just buy an epic athlete, man. Come on. We'll give you... Patrick Mahomes, epic athlete on Sunday. Don't buy the New York Times. Times got enough money. Anyway, it is about NIL situation at North Carolina. And they spent a lot of time with Bubba Cunningham, the athletic director there, and trying to sort through. It's good. It's a good story because it just sort of, it's not too like judgmental. It just sort of sorts through like, Bubba Cunningham, who's been an administrator a long time, is a very smart guy, just like head spinning going, I don't know what's happening. You know, Leaky Black is making more money than my field hockey team spends. Will there be boosters? Are all my funding going to dry up for the smaller? Do I have to cut sports? Do I not? I don't know. Pat, you read it. I don't know if Ross, you have. What were your thoughts on the Carolina New York Times Magazine piece? We don't get college athletics in the New York Times Magazine very often.
No, we don't. So we should talk about it. It was a really good story. Third part, agree, disagree with the philosophy, whatever. But what it did for me is it took basically every angle of the NIL collective player compensation story and brought it all to one school and one story. So it was good in terms of, you know, here's the players, the star basketball players, and here's what they're getting. Here's what some of the star football players are getting. Here's everyone else. And this is a school that's good at a lot of other sports. North Carolina is a top 10, 15 all-around sports school, probably top 10. And then, you got the hand-wringing athletic director, Bubba Cunningham, who does care about their Olympic sports success, partly because they're really good at it. And kind of it's what's the balance going to be? And they talk to NIL people that give money and collective people that dole out money. And, they made it seem certain that this is not going to be sustainable while still supporting all of their Olympic sports. We'll see. We will see. The one thing we don't know for sure is what is the net, if here's the net amount of money that you are getting in terms of contributions from people, and it's been affected to the point where you now have significantly less for the sports, what's the cutoff point? Like, where do you break? Where do you say, all right, we can't do this anymore and we're going to have to cut a sport? Or is this all still doomsaying of, well, this is coming. Will it come or not? I don't know. But I thought they did a good job. They started with Armando Bacot and his extremely nice, bright blue Audi. Looked really cool. I'd like one.
And his mom is his agent.
Yeah, mom's
it's his like agent. Family business. And him talking about how, like, the side parts I liked where they talked about how the players were getting really into like negotiating deals and thinking about business and all of that. I like that. Like, that's kind of something we never talk about. But this is pretty interesting. So go ahead. Sorry to cut you off.
No. I mean, players have had to become, business literate for sure. So, I think that it captured kind of where the tension is from the athletic administration mostly, because it was mostly, I think, from that point of view. But also, like, this is the way it is now. It's not going away. And so are we fine going forward, or will there be problems? What will the problems be? How significant and when?
Yeah, I hadn't got around to reading it, but I assume it's a lot of what we've seen, the last year and a half from administrators of the fear of like what's next. It's just like this big question mark of what happens next and how do we handle this and is this sustainable? That's a question. I've been making calls on like NIL stuff for the last 3 days trying to get back in it now that the season's over and understand like the state of the situation, specifically with like collectives and where things are. And that is like the questions that everybody's asking is this sustainable? And if it is or isn't, like, what is the next step for NIL beyond the collective stuff? Is it, when does revenue sharing start? When does athlete employment start, which we talked about on the pod recently? You know, some administrators want either employment to happen or revenue share to happen because they don't want their teams funded by rogue boosters or third parties. And that's what's happening right now. And it's a predicament. And, you know, it sounds like this story highlighted the Olympic sport issue. And you know, that obviously is one that is, you know, at the top of everybody's mind in college athletics. In fact, that, you know, the new president at the convention had Charlie Baker had a kind of a round table with a few ADs, I believe, about you know, the Olympic sports and the future of Olympic sports. And it's, yeah, it's just a lot of questions right now and very little answers or solutions. And if you talk to NIL collective folks, like who run collectives, they'll tell you everything's fine. And this is a great model, and we're doing well, and we could just keep on going like this. We don't need any more rules. We don't need any more regulations. But they're probably the only one saying that. You know, everybody else is saying.
It was always me.
Dan and the collective CEOs. But even like you know, players or former players, you know, like I was talking to a former Rutgers football player who used to be on the D1 board of directors and just graduated from Rutgers in the last year or so, Ryan Cassidy. And he was talking about, look, the students in SAC, we want more regulation. We don't think this is right either. This is unsustainable and we need more regulation. So lots of questions. That's Dan shakes his head.
Oh. I mean, please impose more rules on me. I don't think they know what they're doing on that. However, who knows? Two things stood out to me. One was, it was a really interesting part of the article, is Aaron Mattson, this field hockey player at North Carolina, who's like the three-time player of the year, like the best field hockey player in the country. And she's got a bunch of deals, like selling t-shirts of this logo she designed. And this one restaurant gives her like a free grain bowl. 30
grain bowls a month.
Which yeah, is, but it was closed on Sundays. Yeah, so you actually, right. She could get two grain bowls certain days.
It's a lot of grain.
Yeah, she's got all these different things, but it's like, so, and then she's like she's making money and she's learning business and all that. But then essentially, if there's only so many dollars, her whole entire field hockey program's at risk. And like, would you run out of money to fund the field hockey team to where Aaron Mattson can't play or isn't played the same way? I don't know. The field hockey team ran $166,000 over budget in the 2021 season. It relies on gifts of donors and ticket revenue and sponsorship and then all the money from football and basketball. So it doesn't really make it loses a bunch of money. So I thought that was interesting that they found, like, this is someone who's both benefiting and then like terrified of it. What yeah. happens? I thought one interesting part that Bubba Cunningham said, they were talking about the Ivy League, and this kind of is interesting. I was having this conversation the other day with someone, you know, someone else in college athletics. And so he said the Ivy League has it right in that they don't provide, because it isn't a coincidence. This is just in the story. Ivy League doesn't provide free rooms, meals, and tuition, right? Harvard has 42 varsity teams, but nobody right. gets a free ride. So all of that cost yeah. is gone. And Cunningham said the Ivy League has it right. That to me was the line in here that I found very interesting, because what the Ivy League does and what all these schools do is provide a platform, right? And one of their problems when they went in front of the federal courts all the way to the Supreme Court was, these athletes can't make money. It ruins amateurism, or we can't pay them, or all the different stuff. And the problem is they do pay them, and they pay them with tuition, room, and board, which anybody who knows anything about college knows is a not an insignificant amount of money. They also pay them different amounts. So if you're, let's take a, I don't know if they play field hockey at these schools, but let's say they play soccer. You're a men's soccer player from Indianapolis and you sign with Indiana. You're what you're getting is the equivalent of in-state tuition, room and board. It might be, say, 30 grand. I don't know. If you sign with Notre Dame, it's 90 grand. So you're not even getting the same amount of money, right? Different schools. So their problem was, well, you say you can't give them anything, but you're giving them something. So I wonder if, and I mean, this would be a hell of a fight, but I know it's kind of interesting Cunningham went that way, in that if the schools didn't have to provide all this stuff and just provided the platform to make your own money, is that the way you save these sports? And now obviously to come up with that idea, but you could do it with football and all that also. Like Rutgers just announced a collective that will pay football, men's basketball, and women's basketball players a base thing, right? They aren't bothering with the Olympic sports. They obviously, the collective doesn't believe there's a way to raise that moves the needle with donors. So would you just sit there and say, everybody just comes here and we provide the platform for you to compete? We have a team, but we don't give you any deals, the same way that would be true at, say, a high school, although private high schools often can find a way. I don't know. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, if they did that, like for every sport, you know, if it's not just, well, we're going to give scholarships for football and basketball and then everybody else, no, that's not going to fly. You would be Title IX'd into a puddle of jelly.
Why? If you gave nothing to any, if you gave no scholarships to men or women.
Like I said, if you do it for everything but football and basketball.
I'm sorry. Yeah, no, you'd have to not do it for football and basketball, obviously.
Right, you'd have to not do it for everybody. So, okay, I mean, it's an interesting concept. The question then, can you possibly donor up enough money if you just literally eliminate your scholarship pool? Can you donor up enough money to support that? I don't think you could. I think that would be asking a lot. Now, I mean, there's
but
some
you wouldn't,
schools that,
you wouldn't, you would cut all your costs.
Right.
A lot of your costs.
Yeah, but you'd have to throw this back on the donors, right?
But the donors are already there. You're cutting costs. You're presumably.
Are they there to that extent? Some places endow scholarships.
I think all three of us were talking with we were texting. It was a group text with a unnamed SEC AD. And he was saying, like, the NCAA just voted with, like, soccer to make the fourth position for, was it soccer or baseball?
Baseball and softball.
Baseball and softball could no longer be volunteer. Or you could pay your fourth coach, where in the past it was volunteer.
Yeah, you could. You at least have the option.
So now everyone's going to end up having to pay for a fourth coach.
Right.
And, like, that's one of the ways expenses just go up. And it's like, why did we do this?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
All right. Is the fourth softball coach really necessary? No.
Like, the baseball coaches have been screaming for years about not having
We need
staff.
Extra coaching. I mean, right. Okay. But that is not, like, that's, like, a luxury item.
I agree.
I mean, you're right. I mean, back in the 1970s, the Yankees had like two coaches. They had a manager system, or they had enough for the third and first base coach. Like, that was it. Or players used to be the manager. Whatever. Like, and I get it, right? The NBA would just be like Red Auerbach on the bench. And now there's like three rows of coaching on the bench. Right. See those coaches in the NBA now? It's like rows of guys all taking notes. So, but like the expenses go, I don't know. You would cut a lot of your cost out, and then you just sit there and say you want to come here. These kids would then be paying or getting financial aid any other way, the natural way. And maybe that's the way that you do this. I don't know if it gets to it. It would be a hell of a fight to sit there and say, but like a lot of these kids, I'm guessing that virtually every single kid that's playing athletics at North Carolina, the appeal was not the free tuition. It was the chance to attend North Carolina.
Oh, yeah. I mean, sure. I mean, it's an elite school, and they're good at their sports.
Well, you had three college athlete children,
yeah,
Pat.
Yes. Yes.
Your wife is a hell of an athlete, clearly.
Hell of an athlete. True. She was a college athlete. I was not.
Right. So. You're married a hell of an athlete. But you had three. Would you have paid, would all three of your kids gone to the same school if you had had to pay?
It's a good question. So I'll tell you the specific scenario with my oldest, Mitchell, who was largely a walk-on. So he was going to get books and a little bit of money. And his last two schools were Missouri or Northwestern because he wanted to go to journalism school. I would have been happy either way. And in some ways, I was hoping he would choose Northwestern because the safety net of if you change majors, they're all good majors at Northwestern. But he chose Missouri, and that saved us a lot of money. A lot of money. All right.
Right.
You know, it's like 75,000 versus not very much for Missouri because A, he got a scholarship because I'm an alum and he got a scholarship because he's smart and stuff like that. But yeah, that decision, like if we had to pay for Brooke, for all of them, we could have done it, but it would have been a stretch. It would have been a stretch. And so there may have been I don't know if there would have been subliminal, but like, you know.
But she would have gone somewhere and she would have swam. Let's say she just goes and swims at Kentucky in state. Mm-hmm. You live in Kentucky mm-hmm. or Louisville. She still would have swam.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
And so somebody who was, and then Stanford's got to find someone else who would have paid the 80, whatever it is.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, obviously, it's great benefit. I mean, I'm not, you know, I prefer your bank account get drained. But no, I don't know. This is the line in here that's the most interesting thing. I mean, this is a major AD staring into the abyss going, my donors are going to start just paying basketball players, and how the hell do I make this field hockey team work?
Right.
And yet the NCAA, again, you want bad rulemaking, is sitting there saying, you now need a fourth coat, you know. Or you can hire a fourth coach, so they immediately hire. Like College Sports Inc. just grows.
Absolutely.
Well, absolutely. They're talking about eliminating not eliminating, but they're talking about allowing like football analysts to be hands-on and coach. And, you know, that's more of a making legal what already happens in a lot of places, right? Analysts are hands-on and are coaching. But what is that going to do?
It's a bit of an issue for Michigan.
Yeah, they're going to hire more staff, and you're going to probably pay that staff more since they can coach hands-on. So it's just going to keep on climbing. Now, that hadn't passed yet. That at the convention, the Division I Council is supposed to vote on that, and they sent it back down to the Football Oversight Committee, where it will be, I heard, tweaked, I guess. The language maybe will be tweaked a little bit, but it's supposed to come back and be presented before the D1 Council. But this is just another way that staffs will grow and expenses will grow with salaries if this happens. Dan, your point, you're talking about basically abolishing all scholarships, like not having scholarships paid for, like not having, right? So this is a good point, and it's interesting that Bubba said that, and a lot of ADs have mentioned that. A lot of ADs have posed the question to me, and I think we talked about this on a work call not too long ago, is what's the value of a scholarship anymore in the NIL era? What's the value of it? Because some select kids, high-profile football, basketball players, are making well above what their scholarship is every year. And, you know,
they no longer qualify for financial aid.
Right,
right,
right. So, so what is the, it's a legitimate question of what the value is of a scholarship.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. It's interesting. Here's the thing. Like, we talked about this one. Remember Hartford, University of Hartford was going to – are they still going Division III?
Yeah, I think they are. They're independent this year. I think they're in the transition phase.
And my opinion is, whatever you want to think about Hartford athletics, and they should have basketball and all that stuff, fine. But as a simple business deal of the school, every scholar – like, if you have – they talk in the article, it's like – 500,000 kids who participate in athletics that are like, you know, high school athletics. It's probably more than that, but whatever. You have this massive pool of kids that are dying for spots on a team. You could probably charge more. You could tuition plus fees for your team to get, like, people would pay to be on the team. They'd pay extra. And instead, as a business sense, the colleges are actually giving people who would pay extra to be on the team. Some of them would, but there'd be enough. You have enough kids out there who are so desperate to play college athletics, let alone at a Division I. And so, like, Hartford, every kid, Hartford will still have all the same amount of teams, but instead of spending money on scholarships, all those kids will pay full boat. That's a business plus for Hartford, which is a school that I'm guessing isn't, they don't have any $40 billion endowment. This is not Harvard, it's Hartford. Okay, but every kid on, you will find enough kids to staff every single Division I program and then some. Why would you give your spot away free when, as a business principal, you would charge for that spot? Now, I'm not saying they're going to do that, but you're like, hey, you want to play North Carolina field hockey? Give us 10 grand. Because if you want to play on the elite travel team that got you noticed, you pay 10 grand.
Right.
So it's kind of a weird, it's a very anti-business free market principle to give away something that someone will pay extra for. It's the BMW dealer doesn't have, you know, it's not Toyota-thon down at the Lamborghini shop. $600 rebate on President's Day weekend. No, it's just like, this is how much a damn cost. You want the Bentley? You want the Lambo? $287,000. Deal with it, right? So they're doing it completely backwards on these scholarships. I mean, this is a crazy concept. Like, just speaking this out loud, if I was an administrator, I'd be fired and canceled, right? I get all that. But Bubba said it, man.
Now, I mean, look, to a degree, and Andy Schwartz makes this argument and makes it well, the economist guy, sports economist guy, that a lot of these places where they say that the teams are costing them money, they're actually making the school money. They're not maybe helping the athletic department bottom line, but they're helping the school bottom line because they're got a partial scholarship and you're paying out-of-state tuition. And so, you know, when you've got whatever the, you know, 12 scholarships, but you got 30 people on the roster, those people are paying a lot of money to come to your school. And depending how expensive it is, a lot of money. So
that, you know, though, depends on, are you over, let's say you have 10,000 students to your school, would you, and 500 are athletes, do you have 10, like, you could fill those with regular students. Like, North Carolina does not lack for kids dying to go there.
No.
Just regular old kid.
Yeah.
And that's why they can charge this much, right? Why can Notre Dame charge $80,000+ to go there? Because they've got thousands and thousands and thousands of kids willing to pay $150. They just don't do it out of shame. But they each year goes up a little bit, right? No one's ready to. Harvard could be like, you want to come to Harvard? $500,000 a year. And they would have 2,000 freshmen show up that are pretty freaking smart.
Yeah.
So it's this conundrum of, what are we, a business? Mm-hmm. Or are we, right? The NFL, the NBA, they're not paying a dollar more than they have to. Colleges are giving away something they could charge for, and I don't know. But anyway.
But now, I seem to remember somebody decrying, you know, these colleges just catering to the rich people. This would be doing exactly that.
Yeah.
Right.
Unless you're a big player and can get some booster, right, NIL money,
then, right?
That's what would happen in the big sports. Like it's happening now. But I've written this several times. It's college sports is kind of in this purgatory, like, between professionalism and amateurism, and it continues to be pushed toward the professional model. At some point, that tethering, we talked about it before, like that tethering between that links or connects college sports in higher education feels like it's just going to pop.
Yep. Hey, I remember that last spring, Jack Swarbrick saying to me that eventually he thinks people will just license their name, school colors, fight song, or whatever, to an independent group that plays football and will be called the Fighting Irish. They won't be called Notre Dame.
Yeah.
They'll be called the Fighting Irish, you know? Yeah. Or same with Alabama. They'll be called the Crimson Tide.
The whole process makes no sense. I mean, clearly, right? I mean, it's just absolutely, you go to a school in, like, even Canada, or like If you go to Notre Dame, right, this unbelievably gorgeous campus, and smack dab in the middle of the thing is this massive football stadium they use 6-7 days a week of a year.
Right. A year.
Like, what? What is this? Like, this is a college. Like, it makes no sense. Right. We love it, but it makes no sense.
No, right? It doesn't.
And you're like, you know.
And when you bring in people from outside of college, like we've seen a lot of commissioner hires, you know, from outside of college sports, they do. They come in and they're like, what the F is going on here? Like, what are y'all doing? Right. You know, I mean,
they don't get it. Or you go to, I once walked around Trinity University in Dublin, a beautiful place, right? But I'm sure it's the same at Oxford, whatever. Like, there's no 80,000 seat rugby Irish, you know, whatever sport. So stadium in the middle of a thing where you're like, oh, that's you'd be like, what is that? Oh, that's where we play rugby. That's the biggest, most expensive building on campus. That doesn't make any sense. Right. Anyway, that's where we're at. All right. Speaking of a guy who's got a lot of money, including one extra $1 million, Brian Kelly got some explaining to do.
I'm here with my family.
LSU. I read from the AP, LSU accidentally overpaid Tiger football coach Brian Kelly by $1 million during the first year of a 10-year, $100 million contract, but discovered the error and has moved to correct it. The Louisiana Legislative Auditor's Office said Kelly was overpaid $1,368 in supplemental payments in 2022 because of duplicate payments made to both Kelly's LLC and to the coach directly. Now, we are decrying players for doing stuff, and Brian Kelly's got an LLC and him and a million. They're moving to correct it. They're calling Brian Kelly, and he's like, who this? Like, come on.
New phone.
Bad job by LSU bookkeepers. But at what point do you know, even if you have a lot of money, you know a million extra is in the, I mean, come on.
Well, it is interesting. I posed that to somebody, man. And they're like, you think BK is checking his bank account? No. So like, all right, whatever. Sure.
By a million?
I think it might cross my mind. Like, oh gosh.
Wow, I really wonder what that was all about.
Now, call my accountant.
I wouldn't mention it either. I mean,
well, no, nobody would mention it.
Wait for somebody else to find the error, right?
Don't spend it necessarily. I know he's obviously got enough because he might have to give it back. But until someone comes looking for their mill,
he was barely scraping by as it was. You know, he needed
guardrails. We need guardrails. We're going broke. They overpaid a dude by $1 million and no one noticed for a whole year.
Yeah, speaking who gets going, fired in accounting over that?
Speaking of going broke, how about the same some statistics and figures in that same audit report that LSU's football program generated $95 million last year and made a net profit of $35 million last year? That was a 19% increase from the year before, which was the year they went 6-6. So, yeah, it's There's no lack of money being made at the very top of college football.
Yeah, look at Tennessee. They beat Alabama, and all of a sudden, what, Josh Heupel got a how much?
$4 million
Josh
raise.
Danny White got the AD's up to $2.2 million.
Yeah.
And look, if you're running a $150 million business, I mean, I'm not saying they're not worth it, but guardrails.
Yeah, that's the thing. That's when we're talking, we don't have enough money to run all our sports. Well, you just gave the AD 2.2.
Right. So, you know. We got an extra million floating around Baton Rouge.
Well, and that's it. You know, we were in our long Olympic sports discussion last week on the heels of the California bill, which would require revenue sharing from schools. You know, that's one of the big issues is, right, we don't have enough money, and as those not in college sports would say, that there's an easy solution here, and that is to cut staff, because you can't cut sports according to the bill. If you cut sports, then the athletic director will be suspended.
That's so
you
can't, their thing.
Well, you can't cut roster spots, scholarships, or sports teams, or the athletic director will be suspended for 3 years according to the bill. So what do? How do you pay for it? And the answer is you got to cut staff, right? Or you cut salaries. That's how you
good luck.
Or you use donations meant for maybe facilities or other things to pay the football and basketball players and other players of sports that qualify up to the revenue mark.
Yeah, was interesting in our Dan referenced our we had a text discussion, the three of us, with the unnamed AD, and I was asking whether costs had gone up for Olympic sports at a higher percentage than the other sports. Like, why is it now unsustainable? And said they've gone up for everything, but a lot of the added staff is nutrition and mental health and that sort of thing. I mean, they're still there. You cannot convince me you need all 42 analysts. And to the point we're talking about whether you can have unlimited analysts on the field. At Alabama and Georgia, every player will have an analyst. Like, every single one will have somebody coaching them on something if they go completely like unregulated on that. But that's where a lot of the bloat comes from. If you are trying to sell people to come play sports at your school, well, yeah, we're going to help you with nutrition. We got this person here. And we're going to help you with academics. We got academic counseling. And we're going to help you with mental health. We got this person here. A lot of it's good. But you can't convince me you need all those people for all those sports. You cannot.
Or a fourth softball and baseball coach.
Correct.
So, or let's write so many rules that we need a 17-person compliance department.
Yeah. Right.
I might just get rid of some of the rules.
Can we pare down the compliance departments now that there seem to be fewer rules being enforced?
Right, but that's what they want, more rule. We need to approve of all the deals, so we need more people.
Right.
Yeah, right.
To make sure getting her free grain bowl, like she gets a free bowl of grain or salad every day. Is that approved? I don't know. Let's have a. We better hire someone. 43,000 in benefits.
Compliance staffs have, if you talk to administrators and people in compliance, have, quote, never been more stressed out because they're trying to track down and keep count of all of these deals that are reported. Some of them not reported. So they're trying to get them reported. And it's quite messy in certain places. And they've hired, there's several places that have hired extra staffing.
Oh, yeah.
It's like, as Dan said, to Dan's point, like, do you really need to keep track of all of this stuff?
Yeah, might be a free bowl of grain out there.
We can't have that. Untracked.
At the top everything. Level, half, at least 50% of deals aren't being reported. So I don't even know what's the big deal.
I can't even.
Hey, just 100% of them used to not be reported.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
Right. You just got
bag
a free
man. The bag man the doesn't report deals.
That's right.
It might have worked. Better.
Yeah. Go to this bar after 10. They let in all the athletes free, and you drink free. Okay.
I'll never understand the concept of why would you want that job? I mean, I guess it's a job, and you're at, but like, you know what? My dream is to one day make sure that I can track every free bowl of grain in my college town to make sure we're applying to some rules that nobody gives a crap about and nobody even believes in, other than like three people at the NCAA who are all up in their feelings about how no one's following their rules and are going to hell and high water. We're going to catch somebody doing something.
Here we go. I hear from some compliance people, and they're not mad. Yeah. They're not happy with you already, Dan Wetzel, and this is going to make it worse.
We're going to hear. I was thinking we're going to hear.
They're smart people. They do a good job, but it's like I hear from them too. They call, they text, they email, they direct message. They kill me on this. They're going to kill me on this one. It's just like I don't blame you for taking the work, man. It's an put support your family, but it's just like what a bizarro industry.
Yeah.
The rules shouldn't exist. The rules don't exist, yet you have to hire more people to make sure we're following the rules.
These are the same, it's the same folks that are not approving your expense report because you put like three bottles of water on there. We're not paying for your water.
Exactly. Where's do you have a receipt for that?
Yeah. No, I do not have a receipt for my dollar
itemized
bottle of water. Yeah.
Don't even get me started. There's a whole bunch of people at the Yahoo offices are cringing right now to see if I will start talking.
Go ahead.
That's all right. Under
advice, we can all tell expense.
Fire away.
We can all tell expense. Everybody can tell expense stories.
Yes.
Yeah, I don't know. Listen, I'll tell you somebody who is thinking outside the box, earning their pay one way or the other. Hormel chili. We're familiar with the Hormel chili brand.
Oh boy! If you're watching college sports these days, you can't help but be familiar with
Hormel. They're pitching that Hormel chili. To me, the best part of chili is making the chili.
Yeah, right.
And it's something like guys are not all good cooks, or even if you're starting out, you're not a good cook, but you can grill and make chili, right? Isn't that our thing?
That's kind of our thing.
To me, it's grill,
I'm completely sexist, and I'm insulting some man out there. But like, if even at like 20 years old in college, you figured out how to make chili.
Hey, I used a pressure cooker for the first time last night. I was so proud of myself. Oh, I pressure cooked a roast beef in onions and mushrooms. I was so excited. Nice. But instead of chili for me, Dan, it's gumbo. It's gumbo.
Well, gumbo is similar. Grilled, right?
That's Gulf Coast chili.
That's Gulf Coast chili. Yeah. Very similar, right? So it's that like you work on it and like, I don't know, that's the fun part. Anyway, you can get in the can Hormel chili. And I mean, we're not foodies here. Needless to say, we spent a lot of time talking about Arby's and McDonald's. I mean, but Popeye. Anyway, Hormel chili is out and they have teamed up with the Modest Brewing Company. And they have hooked up with the Modest Brewing Company, and which is in Minnesota, and they are now produced the Hormel Chili Cheese Brew, a beer that is described as a chili cheese dip inspired, corn chip flavored, crushable American lager. With a, quote, mix of savory spices and hints of cheddar cheese powder. Pat, you are a beer snob. Uh-huh. Will you drink the Hormel Chili Cheese Brew?
Hell no. Good God. I mean, look, beer is a good product. Even the bad beer is a good product. Don't screw it up by putting cheese powder in it. Or trying to in any way replicate chili in the beer. You have the beer with the chili. You don't need the chili in the beer. Come on here. What are we? You're overthinking it. Now, look, I admire the hustle. Was it Bojangles is now trying to have a beer brand that they're pushing?
Yeah.
So maybe it's a hard seltzer or something. So
it's Bo time.
Yeah, you know, I'm fine with that. But no, you cannot make me drink the Hormel chili cheese beer.
All right. Well, Pat, you have questions. And there is an ad here from the Modest Brewing people to explain what they call the dip turned sip. Dip turned sip.
I admire the phraseology, but I don't admire the beer. Let's see it.
Well, we're going to see. Sean, can you play this ad for us so you can hear from the creators?
How do you take your favorite dip and turn it into your favorite sip? You brew it into reality by combining cheesy chilliness with hoppy beeriness.
Cheese beer. So spicy.
Chillification.
Yum.
Introducing Hormel Chili Cheese Brew.
It's the beautiful can.
Now you can pair your dips and sips.
It's so bubbly.
Score your 4-pack at HormelChiliCheeseBrew.com.
Get it.
There you go.
I'm unconvinced. Sorry.
You're selling a 4-pack. You're not convinced it's going to be that popular. Like Busch Light goes 30.
I'm a fan of 1776 one time.
I'm a fan of the somewhat flavored beer. Like I actually like Abita's seasonal different fruit beer, like the lemon and like the strawberry and like the blueberry. Like I don't mind that stuff. But chili is where I draw the line. I'm not drinking a beer. As Pat said, he nailed it. Like you drink your beer with the chili. You know, just like you, could you even drink your beer with the gumbo. I don't want a gumbo taste beer either. I'm sure they make that somewhere. Oh. It's probably gross.
Oh, yeah. That sounds terrible.
That it's sounds just, even worse than this.
Yeah, that's bad. Bad, bad.
You can even brew chili with beer.
Yes, you can. Often, my go-to recipe, you put a bottle of beer in.
Yeah. There you go.
I mean, I don't know. Well, so Pat.
Dan, you're the trash beer drinker. What do you think?
No, I'm drinking my normal beer, but I like beer flavored beer.
Yeah,
it's my I'm more about temperature than anything else. I just like it really cold. I like really cold drinks.
Yes.
So or hot coffee. That's it. So anyway, Pat, would you drink a Busch Light or the Hormel chili cheese dip inspired corn chip flavored crushable American lager?
I would drink a Busch Light happily over that. And as you know. The night of, one night at the championship game, we drank some Natty Light, kind of under duress, but we did. Under duress, as in we couldn't get anything else anywhere else because everything was closed.
That's a tougher decision for me. I need to taste this chili beer before I decide whether I'm diving into some Busch Light.
Fair enough. The devil you know, my man, the devil you know. All right, this has been a weird pod. We've been all over the boat.
Are any of them normal?
No, not really. But I mean, sometimes we're like, "Hey, Alabama played a big game yesterday. We're going to talk about
those." Are the boring ones though?
There is college basketball going on, and I've been watching some more. Like, I am fascinated. Saturday they have this the SEC Big 12 Challenge, which is kind of funny. One is Tennessee Texas, so like Rick Barnes gets to remind Texas like. It's been a total disaster since I left. Now, I failed to make it out of the second round with Kevin Durant. But, you know, overall, it was a good run. But the one that kills me is this Kansas-Kentucky game, because Kansas is on, what's the losing streak, like four games?
Three. Okay. And they've never had a four-game losing streak under Bill Self.
But yeah,
to avoid it, they've got to win in Rupp Arena.
Cataclysmic. He is really happy the Chiefs are good and no one's paying attention. But, unbelievable. And they have Kansas State coming on, like, Tuesday next week. So they have to go to Kentucky, who has just, like, gotten its legs under itself. Was, like, about 2 weeks ago, they were begging Calipari to leave and didn't look like they'd make the NCAA basketball tournament. Now they're playing much better and should make the tournament, and who knows what happens in March. But, like, I've never seen a Kansas and Kentucky, those kind of schools play, whatever, Kentucky, Duke, like, other than in March. You want to win the game, but you don't need to win the game, right? Like, if this is a normal year and one's ranked three and one's ranked six, you want to win. But if you lose, you just go back to work and you see what happens in March. But, and I'm not saying, like, I don't think Calipari and Self, they both have lifetime contracts, but I'm not saying anyone's getting fired or anything, but like, this would be a rough defeat for whoever loses.
Yeah, no matter who loses is going to feel real bad. I mean, if it's Kansas, it's like, oh my God, the bridges are burning. We're going down four in a row. Again, they've not done that, and Bill Self's been there a long time. And then Kentucky, you've done a lot of work in the last 2 weeks to get yourself just on the right side of the bubble. You're probably like a 10 seed right now. Don't lose at home. Don't backtrack off of that and then put more pressure on yourself to keep winning in the SEC. So and Calipari wouldn't necessarily get fired, certainly not over this game, but this season could end up, you know, if they slide again, it's going to be so miserable that I don't know what he does. You know, he's sitting on $40 million and saying, make me. He's got the Jimbo Fisher situation. I got so much money, you can't fire me. You're just going to have to live with me, but it's not going to be a very happy existence if Kentucky backslides back to where they were all of 2 weeks ago when they were losing to a South Carolina team that's absolutely horrible.
Ross could talk on college basketball.
You might as well ask me about the life on Mars.
Yeah, okay. Calipari, side note, has nothing to do with anything, but Calipari does have DJ Wagner signed for next year, the number one recruit in the country.
A massive class signed.
So I ain't going anywhere. And he's doing well. But just as a side note, because I love the Wagner family, they announced the McDonald's All-American Games this week. and DJ Wagner, as you would expect, made it. Most people focused on Bronny James getting in. So it's like father, son, both made McDonald's All-American games. There was no doubt. There is a debate whether Bronny should have been a McDonald's All-American. Whatever. They picked him. I'm not getting into that because I don't know. There was no doubt on DJ Wagner. But he becomes the third generation of McDonald's All-Americans from the Wagner family. Milt Wagner, 1981. DeJuan Wagner in 2001?
Maybe 2000. Maybe 2001. 2000.
I tweeted this out.
One of the two. Yeah.
One of the two. And now... now DJ in 2023. Not only that's the first time we've had three generations make the McDonald's game, they all played at Camden, New Jersey High School, the same high school. I say this never gets repeated.
No, I think you're right. That's and incredible.
There are allegiance to Camden High, which is like, I think they're under some kind of investigation on how these built the team. But look it, if you're going to be allegiance to a not wealthy school, public school, like good.
Yeah.
It's like none of them went off to wherever. Right. And right. None They're of them ever moved. Yeah.
Prolific prep or
prolific this prep, prep or this prep, or that.
IMG.
All three from the same high school that grandpa went to. Absolutely amazing. The Wagner family is like, it's incredible. Like they never, I mean, Milt was one hell of a player. And so it wasn't DeJuan, but DeJuan never quite made it in the end. You know, he had injury issues and stuff. We'll see what DJ does. But like, I mean, there's some great father-son duos out there, right? The Currys, the Thompsons, there's a million, right? We'll see what the Jameses do. He could have two sons. He could have multiple sons make McDonald's game. But how about those three? Good job on the Wagners, man.
Yeah, it's incredible. It really is. Three generations. And as you said, like all of them, mega stars. Neither of the first two became NBA stars, but Milt's got a championship ring from his time. He was with the Lakers in the 80s.
Yeah.
Wani never really had an NBA career, but DJ, I've seen DJ play. He's incredibly talented. Saw him play against Bronny, in fact, and he was much the best player on the floor. But
yeah,
it's an incredible saga, really, generational.
Yeah. Milt Wagner's a really, really nice guy to talk to. I've always enjoyed talking to Milt Wagner. So good job on the Wagners, man. Way to go. All right. That's our show. It's got to be. We'll be back next week with more of whatever the heck we do here. So keep subscribing. Share us on social media. Don't give up on us just because it's the, quote, off season. Like, come on now. This is the fun part.
Well, who else is going to keep you up to date on chili cheese beer?
All right. We will talk to you later.